This chapter 20. We were there last week, and we're going to be there, including today, nine more times. In ancient times, three distinct things would come into play concerning worship. Usually, it has these three elements in it. First of all, you've got geography, the land. Depending on which area of the globe you're talking about, there would be a connection with the deities that they were going to be worshiping. The second thing that would be included in these three would be the people. People think differently at various places. You have some that think more monotheistic, and then others would think more polytheistic. And the third thing is the gods themselves. And when I say gods, I'm talking with a little g. You have this seen and borne out even in the pages of the Old Testament. Let me give you an example. You've got a group of people that are living in a place called Philistia. It's the land of the Philistines where they live. There was five city-states that the Philistines had. And their main god was a fish god. He had the body of a man, but the head of a fish, called Dagon. All right? And those people of Philistia, they believed that Dagon was the greatest of all gods. And so they would go and they would fight against other people. Predominantly, they would fight against Israel when they were trying to take land from them. Often during the book of Judges, when you read about the various judges that God would raise up, it was usually, a majority of time, fighting against the Philistines. And so you've got the Philistines, and they had a geographical area. They were a seafaring people, and so they kind of migrated inward from the Mediterranean area. But then you've got other groups of people, and they would have different types of gods. And so you would have the Philistines that maybe would go to an area of Midian, or you would have the Philistines that would go to an area that worshiped God. And you would have the geography, you would have the people, and then you would have the gods, whomever they were. If this group began to fight with this group, and this group was subdued, well, immediately they thought, our God's bigger than this God. It's kind of like, you know, kids fussing with each other, you know, about whose dad's better. I heard about three boys talking and said, my dad's a lawyer, said he can stand in front of a court, he can talk for 15 minutes, and he makes $5,000. Another kid said, that's nothing, said my dad's a doctor. He can perform a surgery and make $10,000 in an hour. And the little boy that was last, he thought for a minute, and he thought, wow. And then he said this, he said, my dad's a Baptist preacher. Said he can stand up and he can talk for about 35 minutes and it takes eight men to carry the offering. So he wasn't going to be outdone. And so these gods were given credit for victories. Some of these gods were war gods, like the god Mars. You had Baal. As a matter of fact, you probably, if you've ever heard the word, not just Baal, but Baalim, that's plural of Baals. There were multiple Baals that were in paganism. They thought that part of those Baals had to do with fertility. And that was always a big thing, you know. Well, boy, our crops were great this year, so Baal really did a good job for us. Others would say, well, boy, we had a great, great harvest when we were fishing this year. And so the God of the water blessed us. And so you've got all of these people that have these thoughts. And then God speaks to Moses and he says, you go to Pharaoh and tell him, let my people go. Who is this God that I ought to obey him? And then the next thing you know, God begins to knock down the gods of Egypt one at a time with the 10 plagues. And can I tell you that the devastation was complete and the number 10 is a number of completion. And so they have left Egypt. But God desires his people to be different than everybody that's around them. He wants them to live a different lifestyle. And so last week, he told them, no gods beside me. Today, it goes in conjunction with that command last week. No graven images. Now somebody says, what does the word graven mean? Well, has anybody in here ever had anybody engrave maybe a plaque? Have you ever seen it engraved on maybe a kid's trophy where it'll say, this is to say that, you know, Willie Lump Lump is the MVP of our team. All right? And it's engraved. Well, that's where you take a graving tool and you write upon a piece of metal. You take a knife or a chisel or some type of woodworking instrument and you would carve out something. And it has to do with a carving or an engraving of an object. And the Lord said, no graven images. And we'll begin to read that here in just a moment. But I wanted to show you some things. First of all, I want you to know that when Moses came off the mountain and he had the tables of commandments, he had two that he was holding. One of them, the first one, contained the first four of the commandments. Now, because we're symmetrical, we always think five and five. But that's not the way that the ancient Jews looked at it. The first tablet had to do with man's responsibility to God. If you look at the first four, what do you have? No other gods. You have no images or no graven images. You've got no swearing in the Lord's name. Keeping the Sabbath day holy because that's God's day. And then the second tablet, you start with number five, and that has to do with our relationship with each other and with other people. It starts off with our relationship with our parents and goes all the way through that we are not supposed to covet anything that our neighbor has. And so you've got those two tablets. And so last week, the first commandment taught us about who we're supposed to worship. But today, it tells us how we're supposed to worship. And so you can look at things from around the world, in places like Pakistan, places like India. What do you have? Well, you got all kind of statues that are there. Over here, you've got an organization or a religion called Devi Saraswat. And I may be butchering that last name, but anyway, that comes from Japan. We've got some more that you might be more familiar with. Anybody know what a crucifix is? Can I tell you that we don't worship a God that's hanging on a cross? We worship the Lord that did hang on a cross, but he's never to be crucified again. That sacrifice was once for all. And so we don't worship that. We don't go and we don't kiss the statue of the baby Jesus. Not only that, we don't crawl around and worship a statue of Mary. We don't go over to some place like India and have a monkey put his paw on our head, which is what that is. You realize there's probably about 10 different animals in India right now that are considered to be sacred. You've got a cow right there. Can I tell you that people are starving to death over there because they won't eat hamburger? You know why? Because they think that in that cow, they've got one of their ancestors that's been reincarnated. And so you've got people that have all of these things from around the world. And can I tell you why? It's because of sin that we have in our heart. Romans chapter 1, verses 22 and 23 says this: professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beast and creeping things. When you read that in Romans, you see that there are people that were created by God, but now they begin to worship things that are here instead of the God that created them. And we can see that in our own society. How many people worship nature? Oh, you have all kind of people that worship nature. You have people that will go out and they'll say, "Oh, I see God everywhere in these trees." You know what that is? That's pantheism. You got God that's in the pines, and you got God that's in the oaks, and you got God that's in the tulips, and you got God that's in the marigolds. No, you don't have God in all of those things. You can see the hand of God in those things. But God is not inside of some type of object. And so when you begin to look at our passage today, there are three things that I want you to notice this morning. The first thing that we see is found in verse number 4 in the first part of 5. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Now, why did he say this? Evidently, the danger to do this was great. Evidently, it was a reoccurring temptation that was constantly coming up. I mean, there are times when you and I, we get the victory over a problem that we've got in our life, and we think, well, I finally tamed that, and the next thing you know, it's come back with a vengeance. Has anybody ever battled some type of testing or a temptation in your life, and you thought, okay, bless God, that's over, only to find out it was just taking a break? I think if you're honest, you would say that. And so you've got this temptation that the people of God have always had. Now, what do they do? Let's go back to my story about this one that had the geography, the people and their gods, the geography, people and these gods. Well, let's say they did not go to war. You know what they did? If they came over, they said, well, what we'll do is we'll bring our gods with us. We're not fighting. We're going to be friends with them. And so just to make sure that everything's good, I'll begin to worship their God with my God. Hence, we go back to number one, no gods beside me. Don't you put anybody next to me. And then don't you carve an image. Do you know Isaiah 44 says something about this? And Isaiah 44, and I'll just give you a synopsis of it. Basically, Isaiah is being sarcastic. He is mocking them. You know what they do? They go to the woods and they cut a tree. And with part of the tree, they will use that for firewood. And they may take part of that tree and they'll sit it over to the side, and they'll begin to take their knives, and they'll begin to take their instruments of wood, and they'll begin to carve and fashion this image. And then they'll take that dead piece of wood and they'll set it over in a corner of their house, or they'll set it on a portion of their property, and they'll say, that'll be a good place for God to reside. But God does not reside in statues. God does not reside in carved wooden images, nor images hewn of stone. He does not reside in animals. We have people today, and they think that if it's got a face, it's as good as a human. There's an organization called PETA. There's actually two of them. You have one, and they put animals high on a pedestal. People for the ethical treatment of animals. But there's a second PETA that I belong to. I belong to the PETA that stands for people eating tasty animals. I'm assuming some of you do the same thing. You just may not know that you're a member yet. But can you imagine? You know, we have been enlightened because of the Word of God. But can I tell you that if you were born in India and God had not given you salvation and had given you illumination through His Word, do you know that you may be hungry today because you wouldn't eat a steak? You may go around eating couscous. I'm not even sure what that is, but people eat it. But people they worship things. They'll worship things in the ocean. They'll make a big to-do out of a killer whale. You know, I mean, they're out there and they think every killer whale that's out there is like Free Willy. One of the funniest things that I remember seeing was probably 20 years ago. You guys remember when the Exxon Valdez spilled all that oil up in the sound up in Alaska? All right? That was a mess. And you had people that flocked to, I think it was St. Andrew, St. William Sound, something like that. They flocked to that place, and they all had Dawn dishwashing liquid. And I mean, they were washing birds, and they were washing seals and otters and all of this kind of stuff. And they got that place cleaned up. Well, there was one seal, little baby seal. And that little seal had kind of become a pet for some of these little kids. And this was going to be the day that they released him back into the wild. Some of you have already heard this story. And so on this particular day, they got all these kids. They get them out of school. They bus them up there to this water. And they're going, all right, we're going to let him go. And this little baby seal, he is let go. And I mean, he is swimming. And he's going on his back with his little flippers. I mean, he's like, you know, I mean, he's doing it. All right? And I mean, they're just like, yeah, yeah. And then all of the sudden, from underneath the water, an orca eats him. In front of all of these kids. And they're crying. And I'm thinking, that wasn't Free Willy. All right? But you got people and they worship things in the ocean. They worship things in the forest. They worship things everywhere. But God said, don't do it. Don't you try to put me in a rock. Don't you try to put me in a tree. I'm bigger than that. And you and I need to see what God said about this. Look with me at verse number 5, the first part. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. The Old Testament prophets, they always kind of gave the metaphor that God was married to his people Israel. You see that in the book of Hosea, right? You see it in two or three other places in the prophets. When you look at idolatry, the way that God looks at it is the way that we would look at adultery. Now, we know that when adultery takes place, it is devastating in that home. Now, there are times when forgiveness is given, and I think that's marvelous. But that trust, that when it is breached, it is tough to get it back. I've dealt with people for 40 years, and it's tough to get that marriage back to where it was once the trust has been breached. And so you've got these people. God started this way back with Abraham. I'm going to make of you a great nation, Genesis 12. Now you come forward, and we're at the time when he has literally heard their cries. They have been crying out to God because they're under the bondage of the Egyptians, and he miraculously sends them a redeemer, somebody that will lead them out. They have Moses that leads them. But yet, what do? They find themselves going right back into the same mindset that they had when they were living in Egypt and watching the Egyptians. You say, how do you know that? Because in Exodus chapter 32, there's a story. And in that story, you've got Moses, and he's receiving these commandments that we are talking about today and 8 more weeks. He is on the mountain, and God, with his very finger, is writing these out for Moses. Down at the bottom of the mountain, they're impatient. Instead of waiting on God's man to get back, they go to Aaron and say, hey, he may be dead. Why don't you make us a god? Now, I want you to get this. Aaron was a priest. He knew Jehovah. But when you read the account, and I didn't really realize this until this week, I looked at him as just being somebody he just got away from God. But when you read the account, what does he say? He said, all right, bring me your jewels. So they bring you a bunch of gold and silver and those types of things. And he makes an image, and he says, now tomorrow we worship the Lord. He didn't say we're going to worship an idol. He didn't say we're going to be worshiping something else. He said we're going to worship the Lord. Do you see what Aaron was trying to do? He was trying to give the people a visual that they could look at. And he was going to say, we'll worship God through that. And when they began that, when you read the conversation between God and Moses on the mountain, God is ticked. You know why he's ticked? Because he's a jealous God. He is zealous for his name. Now, I've been married 41, going on 42 years this summer. I've never had anything like this even come close to happening, and it would not happen. But I'd have a real problem if I came home one night and my wife said, well, I'm going to be gone for a while. Okay, where are you going to? Well, I got another date tonight. I'm going to be going out to eat and to a movie with, Willie Lump Lump. And I'm thinking, I don't think so. You know why? Because she's mine. We don't share. All right? She belongs to me. And I belong to her. God is jealous over him being their God. And he says, don't you put me in some object and then bow down and make like you're worshiping me. And so there is a prohibition that we see. We see that God is a jealous God. And the word jealous could also be translated zealous. He is zealous about his people doing things the right way. So there's a prohibition. But there's a second thing that I want you to see. And this is a promise. There's two of these. The first one conveys a threat. Now somebody says, well, God's just a loving God. Yeah, well, that's part of it. But he's also a serious God. He's also a righteous God. And when he tells us to do things, he expects it to be done the way that he instructs us. Saul lost his kingdom because he did not obey completely. And when people decide, I'll pick and choose what I want to obey, that's a dangerous place to be. Look with me at verse 5. I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God. And listen to this. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. If you've got a pen or a pencil, why don't you underline that last little phrase, them that hate me. I'll guarantee you that if you went to the people of Israel and you could interview them and you said, do you hate God? Why, certainly not. He's the God that brought us out of Egypt. Well, why did you worship the golden calf? Well, I mean, that's just kind of the way we chose to do it. God said, don't do that. And when it says he's going to visit the sins of the fathers to the third and fourth generation, you know what that means? That means that the sin that the fathers commit, there's a real good shot that it's going to be going to the kids and the grandkids and the great-grandkids. It is a progression. And I've known of people and they would say things like this, bless God, I will never be like my father. I remember one boy in particular that was in high school with my kids. His parents had split. His dad had been in Vietnam, had all kind of trouble, turned into a drunk. And this boy, he literally despised the ground that his father walked on. He would say, I don't want nothing to do with my dad. With what my dad did to my family, what he did to my mother, I don't want nothing to do with him. I will never be like him. You fast forward now. Now, he's knocking on 40. And you know what he's like? Just like his daddy. Last time I heard, people were saying that he's an alcoholic. It started and it progressed. Now you're saying, does that happen in every situation? No. But as a general rule, yeah. The grace of God can stop anything, including a generational slide. God's grace is sufficient if it's appropriated. But sometimes when you throw pride into the mix, you throw arrogance into the mix, you throw the pleasures of sin for a season into the mix, nobody wants to change. And so what is God going to say? He's going to say, okay, I will visit. And one of the things you need to remember, when the word visit or visitation is used in an Old Testament sense, it usually is coupled with judgment. When it talks about that God is going to visit disobedient people, that's judge. And so you've got this promise that is a threat. And he said, the iniquity of these fathers, those that are trying to put me into a rock, those that are trying to cause me to inhabit a totem pole, their kids are going to try to do the same thing, and they will be judged over it. But there's another promise that I want you to see. And that promise is one of mercy. Look with me at verse 6. And showing mercy unto thousands. That's beautiful. If you do things right, if you keep the commandments, God says that I will show mercy unto thousands of them that love me. I ask you to underline of them that hate me. Now I'm asking you to underline of them that love me. If we love God, we do things the way He wants us to do them. He says that I will give mercy to them that love me, and He couples that with keeping His commandments. Well, what are the commandments? Well, the Big Ten is what we're covering in this series. And so when you see people and they walk around and maybe they've got a St. Christopher's because that's who protects them as they travel. No, you don't put God in a statue. And you can go to all different places and you don't have to go to some foreign country. We're right here in the good old U.S. of A. And you know what some of our gods are? Money. Do anything to get money. Cheat anybody to get money. Hoodoo an old lady out of her money just to get money. Can I tell you that the scriptures does not say that the love of money or that money is the root of all evil? He says it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. They make a god out of money. Now, I'm thrilled about how our economy's doing. I mean, you've got people, and their stock market is just really, their stocks and bonds are doing great. Personally, I don't have enough sense to be in it. But I'm glad if you're in it, I'm glad you're doing great. And I hope it continues. But don't let money be your god. You know, one of the things that young people want? They want to be popular. And they'll do anything to get popular. Oh, if I could just be tops where everybody was looking at me, that'd just be everything that I'd ever want. And if I could just get that girl to be my girlfriend, and the next thing you know, you've made an idol out of her. If that quarterback of that football team, if he would just ask me out, you make an idol out of him. Do you not think in this country that athletes have been turned into gods? Think about that. If a guy can run a 4.240 and carry a football, he can do anything he wants to do. For every O.J. Simpson that had to go to jail for stealing his memorabilia, there's 1,000 that never even get charged for stuff, and they've done criminal things as well. Now, they hadn't killed their ex-wife. But athletes get by because they can run a pigskin or they can shoot the hoop better than everybody in the population. Sometimes there's a law for some and not for others. And some people think, boy, if I could just get on that good side, I can live with impunity. We have gods in this country. We need to be very careful as Christians that we don't get sucked into that. Because God is not found in a rock. God's not found in a piece of wood. He's also not found in a checkbook. Now, in closing, I want you to remember a couple of things. We are what we imagine. What you constantly think about becomes your God. When these people began to see how that the gods that were in Egypt and the gods that they were traveling through those lands, they began to see this object and that object and this piece of wood and that piece of stone, and they began to see all of that. They thought, well, okay, maybe we do the same thing. And the next thing you know, they're saying, Aaron, make us a cow. Make us an image. They imagined it. And if we began to imagine that God is here, or God is in that, or God is over there, and that's his spot, we are creating idols, and sometimes we don't even know it. If we were to go to the country of Japan tonight, or this morning, and probably it's probably night over there, if we were to go to Japan, we have a couple of missionaries that are in Japan. We also have a missionary that's in Taiwan. And we could go to either of those three missionaries. And as we talk to them, we could say, could you take us to a home that would have a shrine in it? And to a person, they would say, that's easy. Because in majority of homes in Japan and in places like Taiwan, inside of those homes, there are little cubicles. And they may have candles. They may have statues. They may have flowers that they have set there. They may have little trinkets that hang down from some type of little peg that they've put there. It's the religion of Shintoism, and it's just full-blown paganism. And one of the problems that you have, especially in places like the Near East and the Far East, is that when you give people the salvation message, you give them the gospel, and you say something like this, Jesus is the only way to heaven. They go, okay. I want to trust that Jesus. But the problem is, they want to hold on to the other 15 gods that they've got. God says, no gods beside me. Don't stick me in some little cubicle, open the doors and say, I'm here to worship God. I want you to do something with me. I began doing this week intentionally. I want you to do this. When you walk outside of this building today, I want you to turn around. I want you to look at the building. I want you to say something like this. God's bigger than this place. When you get out to your vehicle, I want you to look around, and I want you to look at the houses that are around and the trees that are around, and I want you to look and go, God's bigger than this place. And when you're driving down the road and you see some huge structure, in your mind, I want you to say, God's bigger than this. God can't be contained in this. And I want you to develop the mindset that no matter what you see, no matter how big, no matter how grand, God's bigger than this. God did not want to be thought of as an idol. The Bible tells us that God is a spirit. And they that worship him must worship him in spirit. And you and I need to realize that our God is omnipresent. There is no place God is not. Wherever you want to go, He's already there. You don't have to put Him in your coat pocket and just say, well, I'm going to take Him through customs with me. You don't have to sit Him on the dashboard of your truck and say, I think the next time I go through a roadblock, I'll have that statue of, you know, of Mary, or I'll have that statue of one of the saints, or I'll have a crucifix up there, and that'll get me through. No. God's bigger than that. And so remember this, what you imagine, you will worship. And so when you go outside and you look and you just think, boy, that's a big sky. You walk out of your house tonight, and if it's a clear night and you see some stars, you say, boy, that's a big sky with a lot of pretty stars. If you've got a telescope and you begin to look around, and the next thing you know, you see a planet or you see something close to the moon, and you go, boy, that is beautiful. God's bigger than that. God spoke everything that you see into existence. And so don't take the God that is that big, that's everywhere, and try to stuff Him like He's a genie in an Aladdin lamp. No graven images. We want to make sure that we follow that commandment. Next week, commandment 3, no swearing and cursing. Let's stand together.